July 2nd, 2013, it's a Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. Don't worry about it.
Hey, people, I'm Watch Pedro Show, but I'm not in Pedro. I'm in Rome. I'm on tour with Stooges. And, well, we started the show off with two-bass hit by John Coltrane when it was in Miles Davis's band, Live at Newport. Then we heard SG by Suaco and Philosophy for Insects with my guest, Joe Lally, from the Joe Lally Trio. That's his latest music. Welcome aboard, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
He's worried about sweating because he had to come up a hill. We're up on a hill where the tail is. And I hurt my knee, so it was a little harder for me to get down the hill. But it was kind of an adventure getting up, right?
It was. And I the last thing was kind of these four flights of steps coming from another street. And the only thing I could do is I just ran up them. But it led to me sweating, and now I'm in the air conditioning. But I'll survive.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even notice. I hate air because I live in Cali. I don't really like air conditioning.
I know. It's okay. I'll put on a...
It's been warm, right? I heard all week was supposed to be 80s.
It hasn't been totally insane, but it's been good.
Okay. Man, we were up in the Scandinavia. There was rain and this... Mm. Yeah, you wouldn't even know, well, got summer for them.
It's getting cold or chilly?
Like the sun wouldn't go down, so we knew it was summer. But yeah, it was raining. Anyway, let's come up to the beginning. What's your first music thing?
I think my sister's records. I have a older sister. I grew up in Rockville, Maryland.
Rockville?
Yeah.
For a rock guy, that's probably a good town.
Yeah. My older sister, Kathy, 9 years older than me. And so she had... Beatles singles. You know, I remember playing Beatles singles, I'm Gonna Hold Your Hand. And then later, like, Abbey Road. Like, just listening to... What I remember is, like, soundscapes. They were so full of, like, it was almost theatrical or something, you know, listening to Abbey Road.
But how old do you think you were?
That's really hard to figure out. But it could be, like, 8, 9...
So you're in school, like grade school.
I think so, but I can't even put anything on that because really I could have been younger, and then by the time I was 10. It had to be earlier than that. Maybe I was 7 or something because by the time I was 9 or 10, my best friend who lived next door had 3 older brothers. And for some reason, man, music was just enormous in their house. Like, they had a little, you know, what you hang tools on normally, like a pegboard.
Yeah.
It was holding 45s. There was a record player under it in, like, the, you know, the rec room of the house. So it was like a pool table in front of that. And then there was these 45s, man, I can still remember, like, you know, Goodfoot, Cold Sweat,
you know. They pulled that stuff.
Yeah, man, and I mean, it was all, like, there was other stuff too, but it was it was mostly like black music. And even though there was, you know, very few black people in my, you know, elementary school, my junior high school, that's all I was listening to when I was like 9, 10. Otis Redding from Monterey, Try a Little Tenderness was like my favorite song when I was like 9, you know.
God.
But
I'm 55.
I'll be 50 this year.
So I'm not that, because you know what? I'm hearing that stuff too, but it's from Navy Housing.
Oh.
And we're,
yeah.
They only separate us by rank.
Uh-huh.
Like, I didn't go to hang out with officers' kids.
Uh-huh.
But everybody else, I was so trippy when I found out civilians organized themselves another way. But I was hearing those records too.
Yeah,
it's not that far different. Damn.
Yeah, so all the funk and soul came first for me. So the first record I really wanted was Grand Central Station.
Oh, Larry.
Release Grant. Yourself, because that was had just come out, and then I got it for my birthday.
After Sly.
Yeah, and he became very well known in Washington, and the older brothers of my neighbor had seen him.
I think he's Bay Area cat.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Sly was.
Yeah, and he's like Sly's cousin or something.
Yeah.
And so he was very big in D.C. because Sly, there was a show that was Sly and the Family Stone and Graham Central Station, and then Sly didn't play. So Graham was told that, like, on stage. And so they just kept playing. So he won over, like, a D.C. crowd by you know, playing for probably 4 hours that night or something, you know, or 3 hours.
Earthquake.
And, yeah, and this was after the first record only. That happened during Graham's first record, so he was just playing anything they could think of. I think they were just, but they carried the night.
Yeah, have it.
And they were played, therefore, they were played a lot on DC radio. I don't know if they were played that much, but that's what I was listening to. Like, in the rest of the country, I don't know how big they got, but, like...
They're big in SoCal.
They were played, you know, a lot, and I was hearing them, and we loved him, of course, because he had been in Sly.
What's that sound?
Oh, no.
Challenged us and never turned it down. We're washing in self-achievement or underneath our hope. We'll pick up right where we left off. Return unto this well, sharing here this birthing place under the mother's spell. Don't roll it in a carpet, don't leave alongside the road. We'll pick up right where we left off. Tears clear.
probably had to wash the upper half or lower half of my body. I would take more showers. I bet you didn't know. I only take one every other day.
Yeah.
just the moment that is here.
We heard Fort Campbell, Kentucky by Joe Lally Trio. After that was The March of Merrillville by Bob Pollard. The Man Who Thought Death Was Dying by Spielgusher. That's Richard Meltzer with some cats I play with. A new song by Pixies called Bag Boy. I think first one in 9 years. They got a new bass player.
Oh, wow.
The Lady from the Muffs. Huh. Partisan song by Sonia de Marinaio. That's a band I got with an Andrea. A Belfi and Stefano Palio.
Oh, nice.
The Bologna guy and a Verona guy.
Uh-huh.
And that's her debut album. And then Last of the Civilized by Joe Lally Trio. Okay. Getting back to Mr. Larry Graham.
Yes.
You know the white basses you use now? The Japanese ones by a company called Moon. I have a Larry Graham Moon. That's what I do most of my recording with.
Wow.
It's kind of like a Fender Jazz.
Uh-huh.
But even more happening, I think. They tilt this pickup, the front one. That's so I don't use back pickup.
Oh, I've seen him playing that thing. Like, I've seen a video of him doing
it. I think he's got a mic in his that can come in.
Yeah, Les Paul had a little
gooseneck. And he dresses like a little yacht captain now with white hats and white...
He does. I think I saw that. I went in D.C. I went out and saw
him. He's a big inspiration to meet.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird that... I mean, I had no, you know, thoughts of playing music at the time.
Yeah.
But this thing was really serious at that time. We were so into, like... I mean, that's all I knew is, like, funk and soul. You know, I had a couple of singles, like... I think I had bought like a Steeler's Wheel. You remember that song?
I remember them. Stuck in the Middle with You.
Yeah. That song, but then the rest of it was all like, you know, I watched Soul Train religiously.
Tom Cordiens.
Yeah, man. And all that.
Stone Cold Roof.
Ohio Players.
Great band.
James Brown, you know, was just huge for me. And Otis Redding. And then, anyway, and Sly. And then getting into Larry Graham was, you know, that's really weird
music.
What
about Jamerson? You probably listened to Motown, right?
Yeah.
So Jamerson. And
so that's what the next step was. Wow. After seeing that, after hearing and getting that first record and just kind of loving all that music, then we were kind of old enough for one of the brothers of my best friend to just go like, you know, they got to come to the shows, too. And there were matinee shows that were all like, now that I think it's like almost all Motown stuff. So we saw
like reviews.
The Spinners, the Four Tops.
Oh, yeah.
They must have done evening shows, but they did afternoon shows that we could go to. Don't think I saw the Temptations, but I saw the Isley Brothers and the Jackson 5. And
Smoking bands.
And I was, you know, 11, I guess.
Probably had one band and then the different singers had come up.
Probably. Like, yeah. I was seeing these in separate, like, installments. Like, I would see one band.
Oh, they weren't a whole thing. Okay.
It wasn't like a boom, boom, boom. It was you'd see that one band, and you'd see a whole set by that band. So,
okay.
It was kind of great to see all that stuff because I only listened to black radio, so I knew all that stuff. The OJs.
Good band.
And so
you got to see the gigs.
I was into all that stuff, and then
good
saw
steps, it. Right?
Yeah.
Good singing.
Yeah, man. Like real shows. Yeah, real showmanship. And then it was this 74 that Larry Graham came, and you know, and this I think Only Release Yourself was out at this point. I don't know if there was another if the third record was out yet, and. Which was Ain't No Bout About It, I guess.
Yeah.
And so maybe that was out, I'm not sure. But they came to the Capitol Center. And so it was a big arena. And they broke the record that night. It was like 23,000 people. But I stayed out till, you know, I came home at 2. And my dad was basically like, that's the end of that. And so then I didn't see anything for
gig
years.
Stop.
Yeah, so.
Damn, yeah, prop.
Pretty uncool, but Bobby Womack opened and I guess somebody else and you know and me and my friend, you know, we were like 11 or I don't think we even turned 12 yet, and we fell asleep during Bobby Womack. It was late, a lot of people smoking weed, and we kind of got up and Larry Graham was coming on and it was, you know, it was far away, but it was phenomenal, and so it's weird that I ended up playing bass because that is so. Different, like the bass playing is so different. His kind of bass playing.
Oh yeah.
Because you know he developed that style from playing with his mother, playing gospel. She played piano, so he developed playing that way to hear himself.
The thumb.
Yeah, He was like trying to like.
She was left-handed it so heavy and.
She yeah they're just you know she's slamming like in the room it. Yeah like on so, a loud okay. piano so he was like I think it slowly came around naturally to get the volume up and it's crazy music. I mean those first Graham records are like high energy gospel. I don't know what to call them. I mean,
his bass playing,
it's crazy. Yeah. Like you just don't do that normally. No. You can turn it into a rock thing or a funk thing or all these things, but a lot of those, the faster stuff is like a crazy gospel.
And it comes from, I think, singing your heart out.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a restrained kind of thing. You got the spirit.
Yeah.
I see it translate and sing. One of the Neville brothers is making a documentary on background singers.
Oh.
And they get these, it's called 20 Feet from Stardom or something, because they're off the mic, the main mic.
Yeah.
They sing strong. Yeah. I mean, Aretha up front, but a lot of these, like,
and they were sharing a mic, right? So they're like.
It's competing. But, you know, like Gimme Shelter, you know.
Yeah.
That lady he's singing with.
Yeah. She is incredible. You hear that isolated track? Recently?
Yeah, well, I was hearing this thing about documenting. I think church has a... And Elvis learned to sing in church. I think there's something about this stuff.
Of course,
so maybe Larry, with that bass thing, that's interesting. He's just trying to get out there.
Yeah.
You got another song from... What's the name of this album?
This album is Why Should I Get Used to It?
There's a tune on there, too.
the mother had children, and thinking she should, she attempted to love them. But my God, who could kill your children? Mrs. Brown, do your bits for Tidy Town. Remove your white trash from the gutter. Melt your sons for soap and butter. Every time I take a bath, I'll think of Malachi and laugh. I'll recall each punch and boast as I spread Martin on my toast. Drown the Browns. Their father had squatters right in three prisons. Their mother went conscious, could not make decisions. Imbibers of cider and preachy joyriders. Sharpie screwdrivers as I made it lighter, which they later smashed in woodwork class. They stole all the tools, but they still didn't pass. Drown the Browns.
Thank you.
shower if we're almost done.
Yeah. Watch for Pedro show. We heard start off that chunk with Ken Garr, Joe Lally Trio, which I have been enlightened to the fact it's two different neighborhoods in abbreviations.
Kensington Garrett Park.
Yes. What state? Maryland?
Maryland, yeah.
Trippy. Maryland's trippy geography, the way it straddles.
It's really weird. You're at the ocean, and then you're...
This thing that goes west, yeah. And... yeah, it's trippy. D.C.'s there, and...
Yeah?
Yeah, it's trippy. Yeah, the Mason-Dixon line is part of it.
It is a weird little
okay,
state.
After that was something new from Miggy and the Stooges' Unfriendly World. Dirty Beach is new from them. Belgrade. I think they're on tour right now. Down the Browns by an Irish band called Toasted Heretic. And then something new from Light out of Tokyo with Bond. Isolated bass track for What's Going On. James Jamerson doing the Marvin Gaye song. You can't hear Mr. Marvin there, or the drums, or anything, but you can hear. Yeah, you know about the story, right? He did it on his back, yeah. And then finally, Coral and Starfish from Joe Lally Trio, which is probably...
I should mention that... Emanuele Tomasi, who plays drums on my record,
yeah,
is just about to go to America with his band, which is called No High Banda Trio.
I've played them on my show.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, so a bunch of his stuff. I like that.
And they got a tour in the U.S., and they go in, like, I think it's August into September. But it's really long. It's like a month of touring in the U.S.
Is that a Rome band?
Yeah, and that's really rare. People don't...
Italian guys tell me Roma bands only play Rome, except for Zoo, was I heard was the one that went out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really, it's very typical. And Italian bands in general, it's very rare for them to get out, like Uzeda, And so Bellini...
They were Sicilian guys, right?
Yeah. And so
and
you
then
have,
there was...
you have some
what was Raw Power? There was some stuff going on in the 90s,
we're going
right?
way back. Yeah. Yeah, that's the 80s hardcore kind of music.
Right, right.
So you had like
Cheetah Chrome motherfuckers. I bet that guy's sick.
Negazione. Of course, he had to have met
Sid. Is he still around? Somehow.
I haven't seen him in years, but he's a
kid. He got his head cracked open in Minutemen Black Flag show in Milano.
Whoa.
Maybe 31 years ago.
That explains the madness of Sid.
Yes. I hope he's doing good.
I think so. Man. It was years ago now. Yeah, I last saw him, but I think I hear things now and then. I think he's doing all right.
So people should go see his band in the U.S.
They can see No High Banda Trio.
Are they doing the whole dealio?
The bass player plays these two basses on a rack like pianos. I mean, people don't see that stuff. And I don't know what Americans will make of them, but they're a wild ass.
But they're
band.
Doing west, east, mid.
I think they're getting all around. I just got the schedule from them, and I haven't been able to study it that well, so... look around and see if they're coming near you.
And he's the drumming. Who was the guitar man?
And so the guitar lady was Elisa...
Oh, it was a lady.
Abel.
Sorry.
Yeah. And she hadn't played guitar. She hadn't really played much guitar live. I pulled her out of Catania. She's also from Catania. I met her through Giovanna and Augustino's son, Sasha, from Uzeda. Those guys I met.
Yeah.
Her as a friend of his when I went on tour with him as my drummer and his friend Giovanni Federico as my Fiderio, scusa, as okay. my violinist. So I had violin, drums, and bass.
Damn.
I did a lot of winging it,
That's all right.
Tour.
At the Freak Track Fly. We're at the end of the first hour, July 2nd, 2013, Dishawaf, Pedro Shudge with Joe Lally. Hold tight for hour two. July 2nd, 2013. It's the second hour. A lot from Pedro's show.
Back of my mouth, still that bitter taste.
like I used to, just living day to day, looking after everyone else. Now I won't accept the blame, I won't be put in that place. Don't make me go to that place where all that has been given can always be taken away. All that has been given can always be taken away.
again. I go. This is my heart. I go.
Herky-jerking flabs of thought, I sing. Bugs scouring from thinning heights, blued my dirty fingers dream. Reporting not their mystery, just smiling like rubber ball facts. They've wrenched from my eyes hairdo, a deciduous quack. I cannot keep you clustered in coin, remotely shining like the wind. My, oh my, where we've been. Darling, we're covered in toys. We've tasted naught but lavished in sin. Thus salt-encrusted, we lie and grin. Scattered to the corners, never even entangled by friends. Skeletons with crayons they are. They rip, crackle, and bite along. Snapping up snippets unsung, snarling croaks from the lipless, for run, careless the moon song sings, echoing rhymes across blank night, danced by the hipless, learnt to stretch time, juggle the broken continuum, reverse that mad river's flow. We dare fart the ode loudly. Soiled shirt harpoons, uncreased. Can we see the whales all turgid in their bronze case ease? Mechanically they sing, mouths opening like a rainbow. Smiling, unfrozen they scream. Fairly we hear a sighing tomorrow, farther than before we can see. Why write when the cave can sing? So I ask myself, what perspective gives the tree? Lonesome but for every forest, silent but as caressed by the breeze, tall but when crossed by ripping saws, perhaps its vibrating nerves we freeze. Pretend nothing hopeful unfolds, that colorlessness shall ever pervade, or when next a breath draws, emptiness like not knowing breaks. No, swim instead in it. Revel amid every moment and smile. Ills perceived can wash clean, unlike whatever answers we want. We live water as air flowing through thought. Good as long as we don't want as much anymore. We are refreshed.
sacred text, poring over roads and predictions. Met with this list of authors, name after name after name after name after.
Pedro Show started the second hour off with What Makes You by Joe Lally Trio. Bad phrasing. What makes you?
What makes you? Yeah, you know, that's the, I guess there is no why should I get used to it. It's just in the chorus. But the song is called What Makes You. When you asked me, I forgot that that's not the title of a song on the record.
Okay.
Right?
No. I start off out with hour three with it. Why should I get used to it?
You're right.
Hey, I'm doing my best here. Man. You only write.
Wait a minute. What makes? Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Okay, and then we heard "Punk" by "Punk La Vie." The early life.
We're doing our best.
Yeah, right. By Deer Hunter, new thing. Have you ever met this cat? Yeah, he's Bradford out of Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
And interesting cat. Some of these young punk guys I meet. He's a tripper. I like him a lot. And then Downward by the Paranoid Critical Revolution. That's mm-hmm. Red Shoot. Runs, what's his name? Glenn Branca's. Oh, she's married to him. He's out with a new band, I heard, too. Our new piece. And then Chris Skoger with a poem, Our Undulate Goo. Undulant goo. That's it. Undulant. That is a big word there.
They're hard titles.
Right. And Terra Melos, brand new, out of Sacktown, with Melody 9. I think the guitar man, maybe 40 pedals. Bass man Nathan, maybe 30 pedals.
Wow.
Drummer, only hi-hat and kick drum pedal. What's up with that? He told me he used to be in a band called Harry and the Potters. And a lot of people in wizard costumes at show.
Whoa.
He got out of that quick. And finally, Ministry of the Interior by Joe Lally Trio. And we're here with Joe Lally, my guest. We're just at the point where he's not allowed to go to any more gigs.
Yeah, what a drag. So that was, I was in about fifth or sixth grade going, I guess that was sixth grade or the summer before when that happened. And then, you know, you go into junior high school and, I started out kind of normal. Then I got a chicken pox and missed 2 weeks of school. Ooh. And something happened there. I think it was like a hormonal thing. Everything started to change after that. I started thinking about drugs for some reason. I'm not sure why. But by the time eighth grade came along, I had completely changed the group of people I was hanging around with. And therefore, was introduced to hard rock.
Ah.
And of course, had my sister's collection to kind of go to. She was now kind of back, or had left her record collection at the house because she had gone away to college, come back, then gone away to kind of work. Maybe in Baltimore. And so there was, you know, all these rock records around. So I was discovering, you know, Zeppelin and Yes and Aerosmith and stuff. So I was doing a lot of drawing, you know, smoking weed, I guess, and various other things. And just listening to all this hard rock. So the kind of the era of listening to only black music was then replaced by catching up to all this rock that had, you know, passed me by. So 77 comes, Zeppelin comes, and I didn't even ask my dad. I didn't go. I couldn't go. So I didn't even ask about going to that show. So I missed Zeppelin in 77.
Oh, you didn't go. You didn't sneak.
But I just heard the audio on, it just happened, I don't know, somehow I came across it on YouTube, and the audio is up. And man, it is really taking a lot of, I mean, they go out there. Pages, I think he's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
He's just all over the place, man. It's crazy, but you know, to have seen them, I would have loved to have seen them. And it's a lot of jamming.
You didn't get to see any of those rock gigs.
So I missed a lot of that stuff.
So
yeah.
It's only from records.
Yeah, yeah, but I was studying it pretty hard, and that's what I realized. By the time I went through all that, and I had tried like every drug under the sun that was available to me through junior high school. So by the time I was really, I started at 13 doing all this kind of crazy stuff, and then listening to all that music. And then I really wanted something different by the time I was getting out of junior high school. By ninth grade, going into 10th grade, I was like, you know, come on, because the hard rock was looking pretty bleak.
Yeah.
You know, that was, it kind of brought me up to date with what was going on presently, and I was like, this shit sucks,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And
out loud.
And then it was right on time for punk rock. So going, you know, 78.
At this point, you ain't even touched the bass.
No. And 70.
Just a listener.
Yeah, man.
Former gig goer.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really weird. I was already retired from going to shows. And so 78, I go into this. I was referred by my art teacher to this different school. So now again, I change.
Oh, your artist? Draw? Paint?
Yeah, I was mostly drawing because there wasn't really the supplies yet to be into, you know, painting. So I was just drawing all the time.
Yeah.
So my art teacher says, like, you should go to this high school. So then went to, all my friends were bused to a different high school, and then a closer high school, caught a ride with a friend. So I went to that high school instead, to this special art class, which was like three periods of the day. So you could come from the county anywhere and take the morning or the afternoon.
Like half your day.
Yeah. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, because I had an electric shop for half my day.
Wow.
Fixing TVs. Who fixes TVs?
Yeah, man.
Buy another one. No. Good old day. You take a test, I guess you'd score something, and like, you win.
That's a crazy art to have developed at that time.
Well, it's kind of
coaxed. Because then it died.
Yeah, totally.
Died.
And also the use of slide rules.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. So...
So you're going to the school?
So in that class, over the summer, before high school started, I took the summer class of this art class. And this teacher was really great.
His
name was Tom Kozar.
Thank you, Tom Kozar.
And then he was really teaching, like, to prepare you seriously for going to art studying art in university or college. And he was serious, man. And it was kind of scary, you know, because he was like, you know, I brought in all these pictures, like, because you had to bring a portfolio. I brought in these, you know, drawings I did from models when I was in, you know, ninth grade from people sitting on a desk in class and you draw them. But then also all the stuff I drew, but they're all from pictures. And so the first thing he did was kind of go like, we don't draw from pictures, you know. And I was like, whoa, you know, heavy. But he was serious.
Was it going to be babysitting?
But he, so great. I learned a lot from him, but yeah. Then he was, within a year, he was out. He got kicked out.
Because
he was naughty.
Okay.
And he was doing things that weren't right.
Oops.
Like we went to this, we had a field trip, went camping, you know, just drawing out in nature.
Damn.
But, you know, he let us sit there and you know, take bong hits in front of him.
Yeah.
So... Later, he was when he was like on the rack and you know in trouble.
Yeah.
He looked at me because he remembered like he was just like and you know and you all aren't and the people who aren't standing up for me. It's like yo,
oh
you were supposed to be fooling around with girls in the class. What am I supposed to, like? What the fuck? Well, he was really cool and let me smoke pot in front of him. I mean, I don't know. You know, some of the girls we knew, so we.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. It was a horrible situation. That was horrible. And he was replaced by a guy who did just the opposite and was kind of like, you can take this picture from, you know, this magazine and this picture from this magazine and put, like, take your ideas and put them together. And then you have your new picture and, like, just prepared portfolios, like, by the book to go to get into college.
Oh, man.
And he was great at it. He got a lot of people into it. You know, universities and stuff. And I probably should have because I was good, but I just didn't care at that point anymore.
Yeah.
Because my parents were like, commercial art. And I was just like, what? I didn't get it.
Yeah.
So I just...
You didn't want to be a Raymond Pogo.
I wrecked all that. Well, I just...
Or you wanted to be a Raymond
Pogo. I'm sure
Pogo.
I did. But I, you know, and I didn't know about him at the time. But, so anyway.
He, you know what he got his degree in?
What?
Economics.
Wow.
In 19 from UCLA.
So you see? What does that have
shows
to do to with
go,
anything?
Yeah. Shows
just,
to go.
You
yeah.
just do you do what's right for you,
yeah.
you know, for you, and you make your way, you know. But anyway, I got turned on that summer before high school started. I started getting turned on to punk rock by a guy in that class, and he was a little older, and he the following year, man, I just got you know barraged with all this incredible punk rock, and he listened to the one radio station, Georgetown University. Had a punk rock radio station, and it didn't last much longer, and it got yanked because they just said whatever they wanted to, and they were like, this is a nice school, and you have behaved very badly, and a lot of people getting punished, huh, in my little biography here.
Go Hoyas.
So they sold the station for like a buck, all the equipment, to somebody else, like who was going to treat
would
it
would not
nicely.
Play that music.
And there was a very famous, like, show for to raise money for them to you know just save this you know station, and that was the Cramps, Chumps and the Urban Verbs played this show, and HR was there and Ian was there and Guy was there and anyone who was in a band with you know later
that
was at
that the
show.
Gig.
They went ape shit. I didn't see that show, but they went create
okay.
People just started
no I've heard
chairs.
About it. Ian told me about
yeah,
this gig.
Sure.
Here, let's hear some music. Good
sure.
Chances.
Skal prøve å være dritsmart. Men når helgen kommer, kan jeg endelig være meg selv. For det må da være lov en gang iblant å senke skuldra. Kroksa står i gangen, og jeg tar meg en vørterøl. For det må da være lov til å snobbe litt ned. Inni er vi harri, både du og jeg. Ja, det må da være lov til å rusle litt rundt i grilldress i ny og ned. For selv om jeg hipster fra morgen til kveld, sier jeg som de gjør i Paradise Hotel. Det må da være lov til å være seg selv, 110%. For den ene dagen tar jeg en lunsj med Harald Eia, sjampis med han Ari. Ja, jeg blir jo ofte klein, men selv om det er gøy, blir jeg lei den kule greia. Da er det mye bedre å drikke pils med Chartersvein. For det må da være lov til å innrømme det, at Danskebåten er et superparty sted. Ja, det må da være lov til å høre litt på Sputnik i ny og ned. Ja, det må da være lov å dra til Sverige iblant. Det er jo bare drittfett å få spart en slant. Jeg er ikke engang flau for å innrømme at jeg sparer til trailerbart. Selv om jeg burde sett på Skavlan, trivs jeg aller best med dansband. Koser meg med rullingsen, jeger, meister eller to. Jeg den smarteste i klassen, men jeg har da pels på dassen. Og det hender at jeg slår meg løs på karaokebar. For det må da være lov til å kose seg med rødvin på kartong og pitt med lipper ned. Ja, det må da være lov til å ta seg en klunk med hjembrent i ny og ned. For selv om jeg har lest både Ibsen og Voltaire, er det ingenting som kan slå det her. Du kan mene hva du vil, men for meg er det et must å blande på noen silikonbrøst. En får være helt seg selv, 110%. 110%.
Women were like machines. They need a mother, a lover, and a friend. And I can't be these three at the same time. So I gotta tell you, ha, ha, ha.
yesterday I thought of you in a most disturbing way. You know it's true. Elements of me inside of you. Conclusions always end in this point of view. You cannot design your mate. You do not have a choice. You don't pick who you love. It's your love that has a voice. Everything is worrisome. Everything is way up in the air. Mostly I am lost for words, but never, ever, ever lost for care. You cannot design your mate. Cannot choose who you love. That's the job of your faith. That's a job from up above. So many people choose the hardest path, even when they know that it's wrong. Pining for takes too long. Yesterday I thought of you in a most disturbing way. You know it's true. Elements of me out of you. Conclusions always end in this point of view. In the most disturbing way I thought of you.
just heard Nothing to Lose, Joe Lally Trio. Ahead of that was L'Uomo Pila by Tubax. Idiot Lalladay by Dot Hacker. You might know some guy named Josh Klinghoffer.
I do know Josh.
Right. He's in that proj. Because an associate of John.
Yeah, we're in a taxi together.
Okay.
For a moment.
The Bad in You by Otis B, which is O. I don't know if you know him. He's doing sound for Dinosaur and Boris these days.
Yeah.
Everybody knows O, of course. It's insane how he knows everyone. San Diego Cat, yeah. And ahead of that, a Barcelona band called The Excitements doing Ha Ha Ha. Oslo Motherfuckers in front of that with Private Sector, which has some of the Turbo Negro guys, which has got Happy Tom before that with For Det Ma Da Vera Lof. I got to see him in Oslo. I love Happy Tom. And started off with Revealed in Fever, Joe Lally Trio. So, where does that bring us to in the story?
Well, this my friend Ivan Martinez, who I met in this art class, he just took me to so many shows, you know. I just saw so many shows. So I saw, you know, in 79, I saw, I think the B-52s was the first show. And it was really intense, you know. You think about the B-52s now, it doesn't seem like much. But that blew my mind, you know, because I'd seen these formal kind of shows, and then I saw the one, you know, arena show. And then I think, you know, in 10th grade or something, someone took me, gave me a ticket to a Rush show or something, you know.
I fell asleep at two Rush shows. I only went to two. They were 30 years apart. I fell asleep at both of them.
They do it like a, you know, like a drug, like a lullaby. So I had just seen sort of these formal things. So seeing, you know, at the Ontario Theatre, my old movie theater, and just the crowd crushed at the front of the stage, and, you know, scared the shit out of me, basically.
Yeah.
But it was the B-52s, and they were working their asses off, you know. And it was 79, so it was pretty early. And they work really hard. Ricky was just like, there was a pool of sweat on the ground, you know, playing rock.
I think I had the record of 52 names or something on the other side. And just reeling off names.
Yeah, they were
no bass player, I think, so, right? 52 girls.
Yeah. And they were a super intense band to see. And I was seeing, like, some local bands, like, in one way, just whatever was going on at the 9:30, we'd go there and, you know, hang out. I was a poser, you know, putting on whatever clothes or something, but at the same time, like I said, he taped. He had a reel-to-reel tape recorder and would record the WGTB, the Georgetown University station shows. And so, like, we were hearing all this. You know, I was hearing a lot of punk rock that way, and everything.
Real
to me,
the
everything,
real.
Yeah, everything.
I've never heard anybody.
I know, isn't it weird? He got it from his dad or something.
Have to take a while to get it on there.
Yeah. So we'd be sitting at his house, like, you know, getting high, listening to, like, the reel-to-reel tape of the show. And then he'd make tapes off that, and we'd listen to him in his car.
Cassettes.
And yeah, man, it was. Anyway, he was just so.
Cassettes were big in the old days.
He's a little older than me, and he just knew it, and he knew all this
music.
He
was a cat who passed it on.
Yeah. And so it just. I got turned on to so much, you know, punk rock that way. And so, you know, I was just hearing everything, and I thought it was all the same thing, you know. And he was gay, too, so he also listened to just crazy shit, like, you know, Visage. Or something, you know, like
England.
This weird English.
New romantic.
Yeah, new romantic stuff, and then, you know, I mean, we knew, you know, early Damned and just everything, and it blew my mind. So we saw The Clash in '79, and that was unbelievable, and took a little acid before that show, and then saw Iggy Pop in 1980, and that just fucked me up, man.
That's the one with Bowie.
That was, no, this was no. This was the Soldier tour. So it was like,
I know about Soldier. James got fired from, he told me the whole
thing. Ivan Kral, maybe, and whoever. I mean,
maybe
I'm not
Matlock on bass.
Yeah. And
on
just,
the
I'm not even sure the, I mean, but it was, that was like seeing, like, I mean, I don't know. For some reason, that show just, I was like, what is that? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
That really struck me like, alien trying to pass himself off as a human being. Like, it was really like something else.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It was really like zapped me at that show. I was just like, that really blew me away. And anyway, other thing about this art class, there's a guy in the class named Dave Williams. he's in a band at the time, and he's older than me too, and he's trying to convince me, you should come see my band. You know, you should come see my band. We do a bunch of these music we're listening to. We cover the Saints and the Damned and the Sex Pistols. And then we do our own, like, you know, kind of heavy metal kind of rock. You know, we were like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, it didn't make any sense. He was really long, like, dyed black hair.
Yeah.
Long hair. And so we were just kind of like, whatever, man, you know. And so finally we go see them, The Obsessed, when they open
That's
for the
Wino,
Dead.
Right?
Yeah, and they open for the Dead Boys. So we go see them. Open for the Dead Boys, and it was kind of hard not to, like, get into it, because, like, it was crazy as hell, you know.
Yeah.
They were super, like, you know, doomy looking, and they you know, gloomy looking and glammy looking, playing really heavy music, awesome versions of these covers that they're doing. And then they had this singer at the time, and so they were kind of a strange version of what the Obsessed would later be, because Wino wasn't singing, but he had wrote all those tunes, and this guy Vance was singing. He was a total showman front man, and so he had, like, all these bandanas wrapped, you know, around his head and knees and shit, and cut off, you know, leather jacket with a cut off jean jacket around it or something, you know, and, like, weird
layered look.
What it turned out to be was the way Steve Bader's looked in Lords of the New Church after he met Vance.
Okay. Wow.
It was really weird. They supposedly followed the Obsessed back to their house.
And he had some of the Sham guys.
Maybe. I didn't know that.
The New Church, yeah.
I didn't know that stuff, but I realized when I saw it,
maybe
I was like,
maybe the Damned guy, too.
Maybe, yeah.
There was a bunch of ex-guys from England.
Uh-huh.
And I think he got hit by a car in Paris. And
yeah.
Some
yeah, later on, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
I like Dead Boys. I saw them.
Yeah, so, you know, suddenly I got turned on to what was the local band that was also, like, a guy who was from Maryland, you know? They were from Maryland.
Sure.
And then it turned out that they were from right near me, you know? They were from, like, a couple of neighborhoods away. And I was going to visit them at their house, and then the first thing, you know, I go over to see Dave, and he's not there, but Wino's there. And I had seen them now a couple of times, because after that one show, I just went and see, and they would play every little tiny club everywhere in D.C., and there was, you know, and they were really intense shows because they were in your face, and the singer Vance was, like, attacking the audience and shit,
yeah,
and wrecking the club. And so I sat down and had this talk, you know, for the first time with Wino, and I was kind of like, you know, whoa, you know, scary dude, because he looked really mean, but he had on makeup, you know? So it was this kind of like he'd tear your head off and eat you or something kind of thing. So I'm sitting there talking to him, and we have this big conversation about all the music we're into, and I was telling him about Joy Division. And before I left the house, he handed me Raw Power and was like, you got to listen to this.
And so that guy, like, has makeup on.
I was like, okay, man. You know. And so the next time I came to the house, I brought, like, Joy Division records, and I was like, you guys got to hear this, you know. And they really got into it, which was kind of weird, but they had this whole take on it, like, you know, whoa, you know. This is a heavy dude, you know, this is really heavy shit.
Wow.
And they really, like, went there and got into it, and we had this big exchange of, like, you know, what we were into. And I, you know, so I started dressing more glammy, like going to see them play and shit, and, you know, more or less in drag to go see them, and just loved them, you know. And then they moved, when I first moved out of my parents' house, I moved 3 blocks away into Wino's house, to a group house.
We're in the second hour. July 2, 2013. Very incredible story here about, Joe Lally's musical journey. More. Hold tight for hour 3. July 2, 2013. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show. We'll be right back.
In the heart of the Mississippi Valley, a storm did come one Monday, Mayday. Severe, they called it, large hail, heavy winds. My heart very heavy, waiting for the rain to wash my sins away. But I don't think that it will happen today. No, I don't think that it will happen today. It stalled over Arkansas after killing 10 in Texas. Now all we can do is wait in the heart the Mississippi Valley. Yes, all we can do is wait in the heart, the Mississippi Valley. Storm did come one Monday, Mayday. Severe they called it, you better run for cover. My heart very heavy, waiting for the rain to wash my sins away. I don't think that it will happen today. No, I don't think that it will happen today. No, I don't think that it'll happen today.
Thank you. would now play by the count of five in the 60s called Psychotic Reaction.
Watch for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with "Let It Burn," Lally Trio composition that started with the Bateria.
Yeah, I had to focus on the drums to make that song sound right, because it just didn't make any sense. It's a bunch of pieces that don't seem to fit together, I think. But really, what does carry that is the fluidity, the free playing of Lele, Emanuele, on that song. And so I ended up putting up the drums first, making that the centerpiece, and then putting everything else behind it. Then it made sense.
After that, we heard Odd Man Out by the Meditation Trio, which has got Brother Steve McKay on the saxophone. I'm a Doctor by Ho Hum. The Weather Channel song by Misty White. Ain't No Mercy in This Cruel Old World by the Kings of Lower Town, I think from Canada. Stefano Palia, Too Much Fun. Stefano is in my... And then Psychota by Giovanni Aldopo Ghim. And Psychotic Reaction, something live from Television, 1974.
Cool.
And finally, Trouble at the Cup by Black Randy and the Metro Squad. The Cup, Gold Cup, was this gay hangout pad by the Mask.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was in Pedro's, 30 miles south of Hollywood. Yeah. Now, when I met D. Boone, the only rock band he knew was Creedence.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom wanted us to play after school, you know. And I couldn't hear the bass on them Creedence. I couldn't hear Larry Graham on the Sly Records.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, if I wear the singer's shirt, maybe D. Boone will still like me because I can't hear the bass for sure. So we jumped a little ahead by going to Wino's house because you find the bass before that.
Yeah, so before I moved in with Wino and the drummer who I had met Wino through Dave Williams. He had graduated high school before me.
Yeah.
And the drummer that I had gone to this high school, I mentioned someone whose mother took me to high school, that was Ed Gooley.
Yeah.
He was a drummer who, when Dave Williams left the Obsessed, I had introduced Eddie to the Obsessed, and he quit the band he was in after he saw the Obsessed. Next day he was like, yeah, what we're doing is, just not right. So I just saw his band last... that's what it is. That's what music is. And I quit. And so he ended up being the drummer.
You might call that a profound experience.
He quit that. But anyway, he became the drummer of The Obsessed when Dave Williams left. And so in 83...
He was just waiting?
No, it just happened. Suddenly Dave went off to school.
Okay.
And that was it. And then they were like, well, you know... And they used to call Eddie Head. Head, you want to play drums? And so he was so jacked up that they were playing everything at 30 miles an hour. I mean, 100 miles an hour. But so he had to try and chill out. But he was a hyperactive kid. Okay. Ed Gooley. But anyway, so before I moved into the house, I had graduated from high school. And a friend who I'd met in the same art class who was still in high school, who was a year behind me, was now in, so now this is 82 or 83, this is how long it took me to start. He was away at school in New York, came home to see a Minor Threat show, and we ran into each other at this show, and Ian had lost his voice, could barely sing the show, so the whole crowd was singing the show. But, it was typically just a great Minor Threat show, because those guys wrote great songs, and performed great live. But of course, we walked out and were just like, man, he didn't even sing half the songs. We can do this.
Was it empowerment?
Strange perception of the gig caused us to think that way. And and my friend Peter Kortner was like, well, I'm going to sing.
I swear, Joe, me and D. Boone, the first punk gig we saw, the first thing I said to D. Boone was, we can do this.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what punk was about.
It is, man. You saw the show that made you think that. You saw a bunch of shows that put that across, and I was going to be a drummer or whatever, and I tried to sing with some people once, but I had no voice. And so it wasn't until, really we saw that show, and he was just like, I'm going to sing, that I really took it seriously and was like, well, okay, I'll play bass. Because by then, listening to Public Image, and which was really profound for me, listening to Public Image, and listening to Joy Division, the bass was just
mapped out.
It
was
so
loud.
Well, it was like
big part of the song.
It's like this is the bass line, you know. And yeah. I related that.
You're talking that black record with the little mountains in the.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and then everything I could listen to by them was just, like, profound, you know.
Yeah.
It was just so straightforward about what was happening in the music. It was like, the guitar does this, and the bass does
that,
and the drums do this. And because of getting into punk, you know, and reggae at the same time, because the WGTV or even any other one station, FM station, played, like, kind of different music, but at night they had a reggae show. And so you could hear that, and then at shows you would hear people playing dub and other stuff, and that made sense to me. And like seeing, I think I saw Bob Marley on TV in like '79 or something on Rock.
Oh, I saw that tour at the Poly Pavilion.
Wow,
Family Man.
Exodus. I saw the song Exodus on TV, and I just was like, whoa. And it, you know what I mean? I didn't know what to make of it. Like it was this whole thing. I didn't either.
He had a punky reggae party song. And then there was weird things in the Clash. It was not like Ramones. And so we thought there was a connection.
Yeah.
We were so stupid, man.
Yeah,
we had to learn all this shit.
Yeah, and we did. You know, it was having a weird perspective of it all that helped. Because it was all somehow, well, you just related it the only way you could. No one put it to you as being separated. So to us, it was all one thing. So I related what I heard in Bob Marley and what I heard in Public Image. With what I had heard in James Brown and Funkadelic and everything else, like something about it made sense with the bass line being repetitive. And it just made me go like, oh, I can play bass. I don't know. So I was like, I'll play bass. And I had a job at the time. I had this stupid job where I took care of like printers and things in a computer room for NASA.
Whoa.
First I worked in a warehouse where we took care of analog and digital tapes. I was basically a librarian, like who drove a forklift and just moved pallets of, like these tapes in boxes on skids. It was really weird, but anyway, and now all of that was probably replaced by like a hard drive this big, the whole thing that I.
But I worked in a clutch warehouse. I tell people there's an art to that because the front wheels don't turn.
Right.
It's not like driving a car. You got to know where it's going to end up. There's some technique.
True.
So you're doing the bass, or you want to do the bass.
So me and Peter
where
just
get
like,
the bass?
Boom. I literally, because I had a job, I just went out and
bought
a bass.
Okay.
I think I went to Mark Lowry from The Obsessed, and I was like, I'm going to buy, like, what do I buy? We went to this music store, and he was like, you know, this isn't bad. I don't know why he told me, probably because it was just affordable. It was an Aria Pro 2 double cutaway thing, you know, and so that was my first bass because Mark told me to get it. You know, I didn't know it from anything. And literally after I got it, I like went to his house and I was like, "Well, now here it is." You know, like now what do I do with it? You know, I don't know. Well, I have no memory of what he showed me. You know, I don't know what he told me. I'm sure he told me something, and he probably told me like, you know, what it did. You know, how it worked. How does this work? You know,
but no amp.
And I bought that, and just one by one, I bought this Music Man. It's a great head for guitar playing. Wino later played guitars with the same head.
Okay.
It was a 150 something, a Music Man amplifier, tube amplifier, and this big ass cabinet that didn't go with it. I don't think it was 415s.
Wow, that's big.
You know, that were like folded in.
Yeah,
like, weird.
Pointed backwards or up.
Acoustic. Made.
Acoustic, okay, blue, black.
So I had this weird giant
heavy
equipment. Yeah, really weird. I don't know what the hell I was doing.
I must have weighed a lot.
So like, I just, you know, I had to lug this over to like my guy, you know, my friend's basement, you know. And then we played, you know, and we just started writing songs. And Peter could put like notes together to make songs make sense, but he didn't know how to do any, you know, play any instrument. And I didn't know how to do that, like make notes follow each other. But like, if you showed me some, I had rhythm and I could play. And so I think like I had seriously studied music all this time. Like, looking back, I think that I took it so seriously from the beginning. And the whole like R&B injection and soul and funk, you know, that was really, I think
school.
It was pretty deep in me.
Yeah.
And so when I went to pick up
who's
a bass.
Who's the drumming?
And so we just found.
It's just two guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we just found people to play with us. So
that's what me and Debo did too.
Yeah, who was the very first drummer was a friend that Peter brought in. And then I asked a guy I knew from, you know, junior high school, still knew he played guitar. And so we just start, you know, and I mean, we just know what we're doing. We're just writing songs. We just wrote songs. And, you know, the bass lines were like, usually like, you know, part A and part B, you know.
Okay.
And I'm still like
but
that.
Was there a plan, like, we're going to do gigs?
Yeah. I mean, as soon as we could play a song, we wanted to go play. We played an art opening, you know, for a friend's mother. And so we played in a hair salon where her photos were showed, you know, her paintings were showed, and it was literally just it was smaller than your room here. And, you know, that was awesome. We went and played a show, and then we played someone's basement. And so that first band was called Lunchbox, and we played those two shows. And the second show was, you know, an old friend who had been in the art class I was in, and she asked me to play, and then she was just like, you know, this is that punk shit, isn't it? She wasn't very happy about us playing her party, I think, in the end. And then we did another band because we were basically just trying to keep the band going. People kept leaving, you know. So we were just, you know, we were grabbing this person and that person and trying to do bands. And so the second band was called Pitbull. And, you know, I think we played two shows with that band. One was like in the backyard of the house that I lived in. And the other one was at a club, which was a restaurant turned into a club. It was at King Kong. It was a Chinese restaurant that was made into a club. In College Park, where I was living at the time. I was living in College Park.
Now, why'd that only last two gigs?
And then it just went. Yeah. I mean, Peter really was really, you know, very opinionated about music, very strong personality about music. So we even when he made, like, little cassettes of us, he would, you know, write something, like, insane on it, like, you know, fuck the DC vets, you know, because they don't fucking care about what we're doing. You know, and I'd be like, what? You know, what are you talking about? I mean, he just was so sarcastic and absurd about the way, you know, just put us in different directions. I don't know why. And then he tried out singing for Dag Nasty coming together for Brian Baker, and then he became Dag Nasty's singer after the first singer left. And so he's
one of
those
guys that with Billy was a descendant.
Yeah. And then he moved out to California.
Yeah, right.
And then the first guy that Ian and I played with, Colin, playing drums, he left us to go back on tour with Dag Nasty. You know, we're like, okay, you know, and it was just that's how
something about that band
went around.
But so what happens?
So we just play, and we practiced a bit in that house. Like one time our drummer couldn't show up, so Wino sat there at the drums and was like, I'll sit in for you. He just went like, dunka, 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 played like, you know, and really helped. And you know, just being there, and actually Eddie, who was playing in the Obsessed at the time, filled in for a drummer. In Pitbull, we had this guitar player, Dave Smith, who swears he taught me to play bass the last time I saw him. I hadn't seen him in 25 years, and he was like, hey, yeah, you know, I tell people, yeah, I played with Joe Lally, I taught him how to play bass. And I was like, really? I was like, well, I got a fucking bone to pick with you, motherfucker, because I still didn't know what the fuck I was doing at that point. He's lucky he didn't get hit, which is something I don't do. But anyway, Eddie played drums with us, which was wild, because we had, like, this drummer Dave had brought in, and he just had this giant drum set, but just didn't hit like you.
Tippy tap.
Yeah, and then when we had Eddie in, because, like, we got a show, we're gonna play this King Kong's place. We were like, you know, we need to get. And so Eddie was like, okay, I'll play. You know, so when we played the songs with Eddie, suddenly, like, I could play bass, like I could really play, and I realized
he was grooving.
I suddenly realized, like, shit, it really makes a difference. Yeah. You know? And so that taught me a lot. But, you know, so everything you do is just teaching you everything as you go along.
Best in the next.
And I probably did learn some things about playing Dave's music, but it was just playing his songs, none of which I remember. But that went on, and then I hurt myself at work, cut these fingers to the bone, cut this finger to the bone. Just couldn't play for a while. Had moved out of Wino's house and was, you know, after that, and had lived somewhere, and it was, hand was healing, I guess, through all of that. And then started to try and play bass again with some guy putting together a band, this guy Kenny Dredd, and wasn't very good at it. And that was like Beefeater was about to go on tour, and I knew Fred Smith because he had seen the Obsessed shows. He was a big Obsessed fan, so we were there seeing those shows. And that's when my life changed, man. I was like, I had this government job, worked for a contractor for NASA.
Yeah.
And so I was like, Fred, save my life. Take me on tour. So now it's 1986.
Yeah.
And they took me on tour for 2 months in the summer of 86 across the United States for the first time. You know, I left the East Coast, saw the States. I had never been into Canada. Went with them into Canada, all the way to the West Coast. You know, it was just blew my mind. I thought they were the greatest.
You learned some days.
And I watched, and I just watched what was going on, watching Doug play.
Yeah.
I thought they were the greatest band on earth, you know, and could set up Kenny's drums to, like, almost exactly the way he wanted. You know, I really was like, I'm in this band, but I just, you know, I was their dog, but, you know, I was, that's when it really, really, really hit me, like, what it was to be in a band.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did, you know, I basically sold my future to do that. I had paid, you know, vacation and paid, you know, I had all the benefits, dental, health, everything, and free schooling for computers between 82 and 86. I could have done 4 years, which would help me right now, and I didn't do any of that shit, you know, because I hated that. I was like, I don't want to fucking sit in front of a computer. No offense, Mr. Computer. But I just didn't want to do that stuff, anyway, it really was something to go and see the world, basically, was what I was doing with them.
When you came home?
Yeah, man, I came home and I just didn't have anything. And we left from Discord House because the band met there. Tomas, the singer, lived at Discord. We got our stuff together there to leave, and I spoke with Ian briefly for the first time there, really. I had spoken to him at Yesterday and Today, the record store he worked at, but that was very brief, and he, you know, didn't even remember talking to me there. I just said, hey, aren't you in a band now? Because he didn't have a band at the time. And we didn't really, you know, connect in any way. But we were about to leave on this tour, so I spoke to him about the police raiding the house that I lived in College Park. And so he was like, oh, yeah, I read about that in the paper. Because we got accused of, you know, worshiping the devil and stuff. That's a whole other story. But we spoke before I left on that tour, and then when we came back, I didn't really have a place to stay, so Tomas was like, just crash here, and in the morning, you know, Ian was like, why don't I take you all to lunch today, and we'll talk about the tour. So he took us, you know, it was just incredible. I was sitting there with Tomas and Ian having lunch, talking about the whole tour, and I think he could see that, like, the tour kind of split that band.
Yeah.
Because they were two guys who were like this and two guys who were like that.
Right.
And they asked me to be vegetarian on the tour, for example, because two of them were. And I was like, man, I'll fucking walk on my hands. Just take me on tour with you.
Sure, sure.
So I was like, I became a vegetarian. I got away from, like, I was really wanting to get away from drugs, but I was still just about to score, like, you know, 100 hits of Valium before we left. But then it didn't come through. And I just couldn't, you know, get away from that way of thinking. I just couldn't get out of that. And so that tour did all that for me, like, in a nutshell, just boom, I was able to, like, move out of a whole way of life that was killing me into, you know, to a different way of looking at everything. And going out with, especially Tomas, you know, and Doug, just kind of being different kind of characters. Kenny and Fred were more like me already,
right.
You know. But I came back from that, and I lived with Fred for a while, you know, but just that first week after we had that conversation with Ian, he called me up, and I was at my girlfriend's sister's apartment. We were, like, house-sitting her apartment. And he, you know, just was like, so do you want to come play bass, you know, with this new thing I'm doing? I got a drummer, Colin, who's going to play. And I was like, yeah, sure. He never saw me play bass. He never, you know what I mean? He was just, this was based to me, this was based on our conversation. But I sang, you know, when I was on tour with Beefeater, when we were in Fresno, I think I did the first show, I sang Pay to Come with the band. After the show, they were like, get, you know, Tomas would go do, you know, your thing, you know, and I'd get up and sing with them. And then I'd start doing that on the tour all the way back home. And so when they played their first DC show back home, within that first week, I sang. And then they made me stay up and do, like, Manic Depression and, you know, some other shit that they played, and I was like, I don't know these words, you know. And I was probably, my timing was probably off and everything. But I loved, you know, and I used to, when I was at work, you know, this is the kind of thing I did even though I wasn't playing bass all the time. I'd have the Bad Brains lyrics, and while I was, like, getting tapes out of the, you know, warehouse, I would go through the tune in my head, and I would go, like, you know, I make decisions with precision, lost inside this man, collision, just to see that what to be is perfectly my fantasy. And that started, you know what I mean? I did that as, like, an exercise in how is this done, you know?
Because
lyrics were there. But it was all, you know, it was all there, and it's too fast to even say that thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can feel where it sits in a, in the you know, and that's a weird rhythm in itself. So it's, anyway, that's swing, like that's jazz.
Yeah, I mean, Gary told me they were a fusion band at first.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's how that.
He said he was a bassist. He went over to guitar. Did the trader.
That's wild.
The trader thing. So, he's never heard you play bass, but come on and play bass for my band.
Yeah, yeah, it was just okay. Totally weird. So, but it was great, I think, also for him, because I didn't, you know, I needed to, because I didn't play a lot after these fingers were damaged, and I needed to get them going again. And so it was kind of like starting again, playing seriously with someone, because I had tried to play with some people, but I wasn't getting anywhere. Actually, I don't remember doing too much at that point before, like, after this accident. I think I did that one thing trying to be in a band. Yeah. And then Skeeter from Scream ended up being the bass player when they played live, and the guy was really encouraging, Kenny Dredd. He was really nice to me because I didn't know what I was doing, and he was really like, you know, just practice your chops, man. You know,
chops.
He was really kind about it, and so, but somehow I just ducked out of it, like, you know, shit, I can't do this, you know, or they were going on without me, so they so I had a bass, you know, and I had graduated to some insane monstrosity. I had a Gibson Explorer. Which was probably bigger than I was at the time.
They're heavy.
And yeah, when Ian was asking me, and I think, you know, first time he saw that, I think he was probably like, you know, you are out of your mind. And I was playing through a single 18 that belonged to Mark Lowy. And this, and he had a horn on top of that. And he had the weirdest, I had this weird, you know, Ian, I'm sure, was like, what are you? You know, what the hell are you doing? And so, so everything kind of got stripped down, and I ended up playing Doug's jazz. He had a number of jazzes that he, like, sanded down and spray painted black, you know. And so I was using a jazz of Doug's, and then he had a Music Man, and then I was like, that really fits my, I don't know, it just fit me, you know. I didn't have to reach for it at all.
No reach around.
And then that was it. I found a used one, and that's how I ended up with that, and, you know, playing in Fugazi. But Ian and I played for a year before we ever played the first show. And a lot of that time was just trying to find the drummer because Colin left us. And then we jammed with Brendan, but Brendan was playing in Happy Go Licky.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, it just kind of went from there. We went through all these auditions with drummers, and we just kind of knew that Brendan was going to be impossible to beat. And then Happy Go Licky was starting to break into facets, like someone was going to go away to school, and just all these things were changing. And then Brendan was kind of committing by the time our year was coming around, you know.
But also, Ian was probably writing tunes.
And what I meant to say before was that as I was getting better at playing bass, he was figuring out, like, I'm going to sing and play guitar, which he hadn't done really, and figuring out his, you know, playing electric guitar.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Ian never used a pedal or.
Yeah, I know.
He stuck with almost the same amp and one or two guitars that he went between repairing, you know. Even after he broke off headstocks and shit. But he just made those amps, you know, one or two amps that just kind of had to do the job. And Steve Malkasepian kept that going for him, you know, over the years.
Well, you had quit the NASA people with a contractor. So how are you living?
When I came back from that tour, because I saw so many shows at DC Space, I think Fred was a doorman at the 930 Club. I think he was just kind of like... Or I was just talking to someone I knew, Bruce Merkel from 9353, who repaired things at DC Space, like did some, like, you know, he probably, I don't know how much he knew about what he was doing, he just had that job. And he was like, you know, they probably need a dishwasher here. And I had tried out for 9353, so he was just, you know, somebody that I kind of, you know, someone that I knew. I didn't know many musicians, you know, I'd know somebody and then get a number and call someone about my equipment, like, should I be playing this amp through this cabinet, you know? And they were like, you know, why do you own that shit, you know?
You don't even know what you're doing.
People had, you know, like, that was Pete Murray I'd call from Marginal Man, and yeah. You know, I'm sure he just thought it was a fucking... A lot of those people I played my first show with Ian and Fugazi, or maybe after the first few shows, I'd run into some of these people in front of a club, and they'd look at me and kind of go like, well, you really got your shit together, didn't you? Like you were just that, like, dumb motherfucker I knew a few years ago. Because I was just, you know, I guess I was fairly toasted, but I just didn't, you know, I just didn't talk a lot. And I just knew these, and they just knew I didn't have a clue. Because I didn't have a fucking clue. You know, I was really late figuring out everything.
Yeah, so you're supporting yourself with dishwasher.
Yeah, no, okay. Yeah, I was just the dishwasher. And
you guys are getting the sound together. Ian's learning how to do guitar and singing, writing songs.
Yeah, all through that.
Finally,
Brendan
makes more solid.
Yeah, by the time Brendan was going to be able to play with us, yeah. I probably became like a janitor, busboy, host was the next level above dishwasher.
Yeah, okay.
It was like all these things you did.
Yeah, sure.
And I had that job for years in Fugazi because nobody wanted that job. So when I came home from a tour, it was always there. Oh. I'd find someone, I'd come back, and I'd have that job.
You know? Okay.
And then, really, straight through till that place
what
closed
was the,
in
what
1990.
What was the first Fugazi tour like?
Well, we played our
was
first
it show.
Was
it the same like being on that Beef Eater one? No, because you'd already done it once. But now you're playing...
Yeah, kind of. Maybe it was kind of like doing that, but it was, you know, being in the band was totally different.
Yeah,
you know,
it
big
was
responsibility.
Different.
Because
even
you know
you were helping those guys out, a helper man. It's still different to be a band man.
Yeah, just having to just knowing, you know, knowing music was like a new thing, like knowing how songs went and
parts.
So forth, and then like playing them and shit and
set lists.
Yeah, it was really, you know, my way of understanding how to play what we played was like this song takes place between. You know, these three major dots.
Events.
Yeah, man. And it was like, that's how everything was arranged. It was according to where a dot was. I mean, I just
Math.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
I didn't know any...
Boom called that.
I didn't know any... No, I didn't know what a note was.
Right.
Like, all through Fugazi, if someone started talking about what key or what note a song was, I mean, you know, I had to kind of go, like,
yeah.
You know...
You know where it was relation
a,
to
and
that
I have
net.
To think about it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't watch anyone's hands, so a lot of practices, you know, I was just like... I'm not like, is that... go with that,
yeah.
You know, like my head would be next to the cabinet, so like I just didn't have a clue, you know. And so playing you know, with three guys who'd been in all these bands and done all this shit was really, you know,
you know
I just
what?
Did a lot
he
of
he was a bass man, right?
What's that?
I think when I played with Rite of Spring he was the bass man.
No Guy played guitar and sang in bands.
No, but who, what about Rite of Spring? Who was the bass man?
So
that
was because
I had to borrow the guy's bass.
That was Mike. That was Mike.
I couldn't believe the neck had been shattered.
Mike Fellows.
Okay. So when you would hit certain notes, it would pinch you because it was resonating.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, something happened to my bass, and I had to borrow his. It was like, whoa, this is interesting.
Yeah, they and yeah, that
okay,
was...
Okay, he was playing guitar then. I thought he was playing the bass. I can't remember. But I think I asked him. Can I use your bass?
Well, what you may... Unless it was
one of their
Happy
first
Golicky.
Gigs. No.
It was Rites of Spring. I remember Rites of Spring.
At the 9:30.
Yeah. Okay.
Somebody gave us the butcher paper to make the set list.
Okay,
It was like, sing from the roof.
I remember that, yeah. So, because later there's Eddie Janney playing guitar in a different format, One Last Wish. And he's playing bass with the same lineup of Rites of Spring, but then he's the bass player.
Okay.
And so normally he was a guitar player. And then they reform as Happy Go Licky with the Rites of Spring lineup. They're back to the same thing. But anyway.
DC scene was hard to keep track of. There's a lot of changes.
Yeah, a lot of people like really wanting to do music and just trying to make it happen.
And
just
it,
make,
but
make,
not a lot of long term.
Stuff.
Sometimes
yeah.
you make the record, you're done.
At the same time, yeah, like doing what you want to do. They'd go off to school and come back. Or they'd do, I don't know what they were doing, but they'd leave and come back. I couldn't believe it, you know. But coming from the suburbs, you know, I was just late to all that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
All the early punk shit had happened. So when, for example, my friend Ivan took me to see a Madam's Organ show. So that was this house, a group house in Adams Morgan, where he used to live with his family right nearby. And they lived in D.C., Ivan. And so he brought me to this place. And then the Bad Brains didn't play. And so, therefore, I didn't know who they were. You know what I mean? I didn't know what they were or the scene around them, the audience that they brought. I was still going to shows after that, and then I started to understand that a lot of these kids at these shows, they were in bands. And I hadn't figured that out past that point, because this was 79, I think, that he brought me to the house.
Right.
And then I think Ian and this guy, Dave Byers, who's in a band, who played with HR later, the HR band. They got up and just played.
What did he play in the band?
What's that?
What did he play in the band?
Guitar.
There was two white guys.
Dave Byers?
Guitars.
Oh, that was later then, because Dave was black.
Okay.
In the very
his
first
only
release.
His brother was Earl.
Yeah, yeah, Earl's playing drums.
And kind of long guy with the bass.
I think that, I wonder if...
And then one guy's just moved to SoCal. I hadn't seen him since that gig. It was really trippy. There's an opening man going on, and me and HR downstairs waiting for our...
So Mark Riffle was one guitar player. And the other guy was Tito.
That's right. Tito lives in Cali.
So
now.
Tito lives in California.
I saw him after all these years, but it reminded me of that gig. And me and HR are waiting for the first band to go off.
Yeah.
And he goes to be...
Yeah, that was awesome to be able to see, like, HR after, because the Bad Brains already moved by the time I was even getting into this stuff, and saw them play with the Obsessed at the 930 Club in, like, 83 or something, or 80 whatever it was, 81. I don't know what year they played with the Bad Brains, but, you know, when I finally saw the Bad Brains, I kind of understood by then what that scene was. But had I saw that show earlier, like, if they had have played that house show that night, I would have figured out so much stuff earlier, but
Socially connected.
Yeah, because I was just being a, you know, half-hour drive or 20-minute drive.
And that makes all the difference, though.
All the difference in the world. Yeah. I saw no flyers, you know.
Yeah, when we were down there waiting for the first band to go out, HR asked me, so, what kind of man you think Michael Jackson is?
You're in L.A. What kind of man do you think we're... Shit, I don't know. The hell are you talking about?
I say he's a good dancer. Yeah. You could say
you're right. I'm the best.
Of all things you could get asked, that was so out of the blue.
When you think about it, God. Do you ever watch that Florida show on YouTube? There's a 1987 Bad Brains in Florida. Terrible, like, you know, spring break show sponsored by Chevrolet or something. And then this crowd that's like...
Square.
Yeah, like 100 people or something. I mean, it doesn't even look like many people. And they put on... The show, like, for Armageddon, I mean, they put on, like, it's the Eye Against Eye period, and they just...
Yeah, yeah, we could play with them then.
Destroy. They just destroy. Incredible. And watching, like, HR physically at that show is just unbelievable. Every move that he makes, you know, is on, like, the fastest hardcore that they play and shit. Yeah. Everything is just like, every movement around the stage is just
incredible.
Phenomenal.
I know. We did some gigs with him in that period. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I saw them a lot, you know, when they came back.
Exactly.
West,
you probably
but
saw
that
it, yeah.
Period was the most... I haven't seen them much lately.
Well, neither am I. It's not the same.
So I don't know what it's like.
Something else.
Shit.
We talked forever.
No, but I want to keep going.
Yeah, man.
Even though we end the show...
Should we have a little piece of that?
This is for the next... Because we got to get on to your other things and stuff. Your Joe Lally stuff. We've been playing... All the trips.
Yeah, we never talked about it.
This is all. What I'll do is this next spiel coming up, we'll just go on the next show.
Sure.
Yeah. And, but thanks for being here for this part of the show, too.
Hey, man.
Everybody, it's July 2nd, 2013 edition of the Pedro Show. Next week, I'll try to do another one, I think maybe from France, wherever I got a chance. And we'll hear more of the same spiel here in Rome, though. So it won't be in France. Don't be fooled. But, till next time, keep your powder dry.